Welcome to Pocket Toyed, the internet's one of like 5 or 10, I don't know how many there are now, handheld gaming podcasts. But as far as we can tell, we were probably the first. So maybe that counts for something. I am Addison / Cracky Jones on some internet stuffs, and with me as always is my lovely co-host,
Jordan / Jackal27.
Yeah. And today we have a very special episode that hopefully you guys are as excited about as we are. With us today, we have some very special guests from Yacht Club Games.
Yeah, I'm Nick Wozniak. I go by Woz online. And I'm the pixel artist over at Yacht Club Games. Also here is Erin. She's working on the CD cover, actually, right now. But
yeah, I'm a little busy since the soundtrack is going to get released soon. But I'm Erin Pullen, and I'm an artist at Yacht Club Games.
Yeah, if you've seen any of our high-res art or concept art, that's all her.
Sweet.
Yeah, you guys have been, I'm sure, super crazy busy with E3 and your game you've been working on for like 2.5 years, 3 years, something like that, coming out this week.
It's not that long. It's actually only been since last January. We started in last January, so
it feels like it's been a long
internet
longer.
Years. So yeah. internet years, that's like 50 years or something like that.
Yeah, it's been forever.
Yeah, if it was a dog, it would be like elderly and using a cane.
we're a dead dog's life cycle.
Yeah, as soon as I said that, I was like, that sounded not the way I meant it. Anyways, so we are very, very excited here at Pocketoid to finally play Shovel Knight. I know we've all been looking forward to it a lot. I was fortunate enough to get to play it a little bit at PAX East when I met you guys, and it was a ton of fun. For those of, that was a sentence. For our listeners who maybe aren't as familiar with the game, what's like the elevator pitch for Shovel Knight?
So yeah, Shovel Knight is sort of an 8-bit retro throwback, but mostly it's just a way that we can make a game that really centers around a few core mechanics and utilizes those to grow a whole game out of them. So it was, it started as just a simple thought experiment of how you could make a game around the whole down thrust from Zelda 2, and that's sort of what spawned the entire game.
Imagine that, making up gameplay mechanics and then, building a game around it. It's strange.
Yeah.
I mean, it kind of reminds me of when you're talking to someone about how they came up with a song, like, you either start with the music or the words, so.
Yeah, I guess
Or sometimes even just, like, a single guitar riff can spawn a whole song, and it's sort of the same thing where we had one core thing that we wanted to communicate and do, and everything kind of needed when new things came up, they needed to conform to that and work well with it. So, and that being the mobility and down thrust.
Sweet. So I'm really curious. Tell me about like your team over there at Yacht Club. Kind of like what you guys are pretty brand new. What's your history? Like, where do you guys come from? Who all's there? How many staff members do you have? Just tell me about Yacht Club.
Yeah, we're a pretty small team. There's about half a dozen of us. And we've been making games for a while. We worked at WayForward before this.
Yeah.
And we all just, we made games there. We made, we made varying degree of quality of games, or we were on those teams. But when when this core team was together, we made some pretty fun stuff. We worked on Double Dragon Neon most recently.
Oh, man.
We made,
Blob.
Yeah, Sean worked on Boy and His Blob. He was also the co-director of Contra 4.
So many good games.
But there's also been, I worked on Smurfs 2 for the movie. And,
Oh, man, just keep them coming. So many good games.
Yeah, and Ultimotion Fitness. Don't look that one. That one's bad. We all worked there, and then we got together and we're like, hey, let's make games for ourselves. And We kind of just kind of started doing a moonlighting thing, and then eventually it became a for serious, let's, you know, drop our day jobs and actually pursue this for real. And that's where Shovel Knight came in, and that's when we decided to do our Kickstarter. So, yeah, I mean, we are new in terms of this is our first game as Yacht Club, but we've been doing it for a while, I guess.
Yeah, that's so cool. So all of you guys, like the whole team or the majority of the team, was at WayForward before Yacht Club?
Yeah, in varying capacities. That's sort of how we all met.
Okay, cool. I knew some of you were. I didn't realize that, like, all of you were.
Yep.
So how exactly did the design for the main character come about?
Yeah, one of my questions, I put, why a shovel? It's just something I've wondered since, like, day one.
Yeah, we get that a lot. I mean, and that's sort of actually, it's the same story of, like, what the game is. You know, it came about from a desire to explore a single game mechanic. Mm-hmm. And before we even had the idea of a knight or a shovel even, we were talking about the down thrust and that what that mechanic was to the game and how satisfying it was and how fun it was. And so out of that, you know, we're at lunch one day just talking about it. And so the concept of, like, could we make a whole game out of it? And so out about what would happen, what you would do as the character who does the down thrust as your main thing. And eventually we came to, like, well, I guess you'd be breaking blocks and you would be flipping enemies over, or you would be, you know, bouncing on guys to get higher. And this all kind of led to somebody saying, like, well, I guess, like, you're a plummeting guy or a plummeting knight. And then someone else said, like, you're a shovel knight, a plummeting knight. And then, like, just, it kind of, like, just formed out of the jokes of that table. And then everybody just kind of looked at each other and was like, oh, yeah, shovel knight's great. And then we started thinking about it as a real thing. And then we started taking the jokes way too serious.
That's awesome.
I have the Wikipedia page pull up, and so they mention, well, it's actually sourced from an interview with Game Informer, that the thrust is also kind of an homage to DuckTales.
Yeah, I think that a lot of people see that. We actually, we weren't even thinking about DuckTales when we did that. It was all Zelda 2. And I know that sounds weird, especially since DuckTales was, like, that we were, while we were working, but I think that was a little bit before DuckTales started in production. We were talking about it. But also, the DuckTales pogo is, like, something that you do the entire time you're playing it. You never not pogo in that game, or at least I never do. And what we wanted to do with the down thrust, or the shovel drop, as we're calling it, is to make it more intentional, more combat-based. The combat in Zelda 2 is actually, it's, like, weirdly complicated.
Yeah.
Just in what you're doing with your fingers. Like, if you want to attack those guys, the darkness that have the shield that goes up and down, you have to, like, if you jump at them and then duck as you're landing and attack at the same time, you'll, like, do two strikes at once. And it's, like, this weird, like, level of complicated kind of glitchiness that is fun and exciting, and it makes the combat extra interesting. And that's all we were thinking about as we were talking about the down thrust. I know that DuckTales is, I love DuckTales, but I would say it's mostly the intentional down thrust in Zelda 2.
Sweet. So you obviously mentioned DuckTales and then Zelda 2 as well. What other games have been big influences for you guys when it comes to developing Shovel Knight?
Oh man, that's like, what other games have you played and enjoyed?
When I played it at PAX, it kind of seemed like maybe Dark Souls had been an influence.
Yeah, definitely. And we
it's the Dark Souls of it's the Dark Souls of Zelda 2.
Man, that would be crazy if that was true. But yeah, I think
Zelda 2 is the Dark Souls of Zelda 2.
No, yeah. Zelda 2 is the Dark Souls of the Zelda series of the NES.
But, of the video games.
So, like, you know, we played a bunch of NES games when we were kids. We played, you know, Mega Man, obviously. We played Castlevania. We played all kinds of things. More recently, Dark Souls has been definitely something that we all played together. Like, that was something that rekindled that feeling of going back in the playground and talking about the game with your buddies. So I don't know. It's hard to say exactly which ones are in there, because we didn't, like, rip any one particular game off. but we did, you know, have that sense of those games that focus on around core mechanics and built on those. And so, I'm sure any of those would probably have been a huge influence to us.
What, and this is more of a personal question, but, for you two, what are some of your like biggest, what games are most influential on you personally? Just like on you making games and just kind of all of that. Just one or two of them, like most influential.
I guess right now, I mean, I think that's a question that evolves over time.
Yeah.
Like you never have just one game that is going to be the beacon of your game design or you know, your sensibilities throughout your whole life. Mm. Dark Souls is definitely a big one right now. I don't know, it depends on what I'm doing, right? So if it's like, if I'm thinking about design stuff, Dark Souls is definitely high up there. So is just like, you know, Mega Man X, those games that really like focus on the design. And then in terms of art, man, I can't get enough of the art from Metal Slug 3.
Oh, yes!
Yeah.
Possible.
So good.
The only Metal Slug, really.
Right.
I wouldn't say that. But,
but yeah, I mean, those are pretty influential in terms of like when I'm thinking about things of art, or like making art or, you know, having a design discussion, those keep recurring. I also love, though, like, it's hard for me to say this, because most people don't consider it a game, but I really love Flower a really whole lot. And like, yeah, nobody else at Yacht Club likes Flower too much, but I love Flower, mainly because I really want to fly.
Shovel Knight does kind of seem like the opposite of Flower.
Yeah, right.
But I mean, Flower, I love Flower. Flower's a great game, so.
Yeah, but it's all just presentation. It's all just like, hey, like, yeah, now you're flying through a universe and you're feeling good and there's nice sounds and you're just like, just happy. And Shovel Knight's like, just like, test your skills and be a knight and, you know, hit things and laugh.
Be a knight, test your might.
Unfortunately, I haven't gotten to play Flower yet, but I did really, really love Journey a lot.
Yes, I have Journey in my ever-growing backlog. And doing game development just means that you don't get a lot of free time, but that's definitely what I'm going to play.
So I just kind of thought about this. Spending so much time developing a game and working on it, like, every single day for as long as you do, is this, I mean, do you see yourself coming back to Shovel Knight, like 5 years from now? Do you think you're going to want to play Shovel Knight? Or when you think about it, are you just going to be like, oh my God,
I'm so sick of Shovel Knight.
I've already spent so much time on this. I just don't want to look at it.
No, that's totally true. And right now it's really hard for me to look at too much Shovel Knight things. Because you get really burned out. Especially the last few weeks of development, even though it happened, you know, a month ago or so, or longer, I guess now. You know, the last few weeks are just playing the game over and over again. You finish it, and it's like, okay, I finished the PC build. Or it's like, great, now open it up on 3DS and play it again. Over and over and over again, and you're just never not playing the game. So, you get definitely fatigued with it, for sure. But I think I'll come back to it. I like playing Double Dragon Neon and Blood Rain. I didn't spend nearly as much time on Blood Rain, but Double Dragon Neon had some pretty crazy crunch time as well.
Yeah.
So I also played that with friends.
Absolutely forgot about that. You guys made that Blood Rain game. That was a cool game.
Oh yeah, that was fun.
I love Double Dragon Neon so much. Me and my roommate have spent a lot of time playing that. Because it's kind of a weird situation where you spend so much time and you get burnt out on something, but at the same time, like, you've poured so much of yourself into it that you're proud of it, and you, like, I mean, I'm sure you love Shovel Knight, but, like, I love your Shovel Knight, but can you just go be in your room for a while with someone else?
That's totally what it
take
is.
Take care of you.
Yep, that's exactly what it is. And, you know, we spend the last since like December up until we announced that we shipped it, we were there at work every single day for as many hours as we could stand.
Yeah.
So that was, you know, not 24/7, but close to like 18.7.
And then like, and I mean, I don't want to have you say anything that you're not ready to say yet, but okay. I imagine that also at the same time, like now that here in the next few weeks or so, it'll be time to move on to your next game after all of the promotion is done. Like, I'm sure there's kind of a weird thing where it's like, do we do Shovel Knight 2? So burn out on Shovel Knight. I want to make something new, something,
right.
something else different. But, you know, Shovel Knight's obviously it's going to do really well, and Shovel Knight 2 might make more money than an original. So I just imagine like there's just a lot of stress and conflict in terms of that.
Yeah, well, fortunately or unfortunately, we don't really have that choice right now because starting, you know, when we start back here, we start getting back into production, it'll actually be on the stretch goal content for Shovel Knight. So we still have to do the things like the battle mode, the gender swap, the three playable boss knights. Like, each of those major content modules will be coming down the line, and they'll be free updates, but the that's major content, so we're going to have to be developing that for the next year or so. So whether I like it or not, Shovel Knight's sort of going to be a part of my life for a long time.
For some reason, I thought that was already done.
Some of it is. Like, some of the stretch goals are done, like, as far as the ones that are being incorporated into the main content. You know, like the music player and achievements and all, you know, that kind of stuff. But the major content stuff, yeah, we're saving that for a little bit later. And, you know, it'll be free and it'll be just kind of automatic. And so hopefully Shovel Knight is a thing that just kind of sits in your inbox or in your Steam library or your Nintendo console or whatever and just kind of grows over and over and over and over. And by the end of it, you're paying the same price as you started, but with so much extra content, it's like the, you know, you just get, like, $15 was for 1.0, but now $15 is for, like, you know, 1.8 or whatever, and it's just all these extra things
like
in the game.
A ton to come back to.
Yeah, exactly.
That's great. Well, I was going to ask another question, but Jordan, I've been talking a lot. I'll let you go.
So something I've been wondering is, it seems like you guys really kind of, I don't want to say gave preference to Nintendo consoles, you know what I'm saying? But, like, it seems like you guys are really pushing this game on Nintendo consoles. And so I was just wondering why you made that decision. Why was that kind of what you guys decided?
Well, the decision wasn't necessarily, like, let's figure out which consoles we don't want to do. Like, it wasn't that, like, let's do Nintendo, you know, and forget Microsoft and Sony. It was more just, we have five people, two of them are programmers, only two of them. So let's figure out how to make a game on as many platforms as we can for launch. And we were like at capacity doing, you know, PC and Steam, and then Nintendo 3DS and Wii U. So like that's sort of our capacity of what we could do. And it wouldn't really make sense to do Shovel Knight on any other console just because it's such a, it has its roots in Nintendo, it has its roots in that, you know, 8-bit era. So it would really be, I think, weird to see Shovel Knight show up on Steam and Xbox One first.
Yeah,
you know?
I was really wondering if that kind of influenced the decision, like the fact that it is a, I hate that term 8-bit, but the fact that it's like a, you know, retro NES looking game, I guess I could just say 8-bit.
Yeah, I know what you're saying about the 8-bit thing. It's just it's the most descriptive and identifiable thing that people can hear for as far as describing a game like ours, but yeah, it's not. I mean, it's not 8-bit. It's way not 8-bit, but that's okay.
Let me just say though, you said you're the pixel artist, though, right?
Yeah.
So let me just give you a round of applause from somebody who collects from somebody who collects and plays a lot of retro games of how authentic the pixel art in this game looks, because I get so sick of these retro games. These guys that are like, we're a retro game, we're this 8-bit game, and like. There's no, like, limited color palette. There's no, you know what I'm saying? It doesn't look authentic. Shovel Knight, I know that it's not completely authentic, but it looks authentic. It gives you that vibe. It looks like an NES game, and that I can dig it. So, anyway.
Well, yeah, that was, well, thanks. Yeah, that was something that we wanted to make sure was handled well. You know, one of the things that we wanted to do is make sure that it wasn't just a game that sort of, I don't know, put on that coat of NES. or kind of like for it to be flashy. I don't know. Like it was something that was more important that it was an NES game at heart, or like a Nintendo game at heart. And so we tried to make sure that, you know, we stuck to the right colors, so it gave that same sense of feeling of that era. But also we added, you know, we have animations in there that they could never run on the NES. We have characters that are big, and we have, even though we are sticking to the NES color palette, we aren't limiting ourselves to only 16 colors on screen at a time. So we wanted to make sure that it felt, you know, it feels, I think we need a different word besides 8-bit. I guess retro. I hate that word too. that it feels authentic in Nintendo without actually being too gimmicky with it.
Yeah. And I think you guys hit that perfectly. I mean, you look at the game, it's just stinking gorgeous.
Yeah.
Okay, I'm glad you think so.
Looking at the sky in the background, this like forest area right now, it's just so, so pretty.
Yeah, that was one of the earlier ones, and I'm glad we did that because you know, the first background that we did was for King Knight. And then I did Propeller Knight, actually. That was originally level 2. And then, you know, I think we went back eventually to Plains eventually. But that color scheme was something that was sort of, those three colors were kind of the balance we did to make sure a game felt like an NES game.
Yeah.
All right, so Addison, why don't you? I've been talking for a while. Why don't you go ahead and talk about the music or something?
Okay. So I assume Jake Kaufman came to be involved in the project because you guys just already knew him from all the work that he's done with Way Forward.
Yeah, absolutely.
And he's great. I love him. I was fortunate enough to meet him in Seattle last year, and he was just super nice. He actually, our theme song that we intro the show with every episode is a Jake Kaufman track actually gave us permission to use, even though we were maybe already using it.
No, that's cool. He is definitely an open guy, so that's great.
So, but my question is, how did this partnership with, I hope I don't butcher her name, but Maname Matsume, how did that partnership come to be? Real quick, for listeners who don't know, she did a lot of Mega Man music, so.
Yeah, Manami Matsumai is the original sound designer for Mega Man 1. So she did all the music, but also she did, like, all the sound effects that sort of, like, became the de facto sound effects for the rest of the Mega Man series. Like, the sound of the door opening, that chunk, 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 that's, like, that's all her
sound. All those, like, super iconic just sound effects and, like, music that, as soon as you hear it, you just immediately know Mega Man.
She did Mega Man 1. I think she did another track for Mega Man 2, and then she did one other track for Mega Man 10, which is actually I'm not a huge fan of Mega Man 10, but her track in Mega Man 10 is awesome. So how did we get in contact with Matsumai-san? So she contacted us through a guy that she was working with named Mohammed Tahir, and he does sound compilations, or like a compilation of music, and he puts them out. He was working on a CD called World 1-2, and it had a bunch of chiptune artists. The guy that did I forget the other's names because I just haven't looked at it in a long time. The guy that did like the Ninja Gaiden 2 soundtrack did a track for them. Obviously Manami did one, and all kinds of others. So he had just finished, or he was wrapping up that project, and got in contact with us over Kickstarter. And at first we were like, no, this is a scam. we had known about Manami Matsumai for a long time. We had talked about her, and it's like, you know, we had heard rumors about her like working with the original programmers on the NES, and how she would have to like sit down with one and like compose the music with like by proxy. And like, it was like we talked about it for a long time and her, you know, amazingness. And so she was sort of a legend to us. And so when this guy comes up and he's like, yeah, I know this person and I work with her and she wants to do a track, we were like, you're a liar.
We were researching him and we were It was the strangest email.
Yeah, definitely. We had to, yeah. So we had to just kind of go by faith that this was the real deal. And it turned out it was, you know, we over a few emails, kind of like he grew our trust and he's a great guy. Right now, yeah, he's a really cool guy. He's that right now that they were Coupa.tv. Now they're Bravewave. So you can follow them on Twitter and stuff. They just released another album recently that I have yet to listen to, but it's sitting on my desk right now. I'm looking at it. And, yeah, so they also are the ones that got in touch with, the Mighty No. 9 guys. And that's why, you know, that's why it's happening on Mighty No. 9. She's also doing the music there. So yeah, that was sort of the story of how, Manami Matsumai joined the team for two tracks. So yeah, she's doing two tracks of the soundtrack.
That's pretty awesome. So the Kickstarter just kind of blew up and she just saw it, I guess, or like?
Yeah, I think, probably Muhammad saw it and brought it to her attention, or maybe she saw it. I'm not actually sure who, was the originator of like, you know, who saw it first, but they both like were really excited for it and she didn't speak English either well enough to communicate or not confident enough in it. So we've kind of communicated through the team at Bravewave, and they've always expressed how excited she is and how pumped she is for Shovel Knight. We got like a little picture of her. That was one of the things we had to ask for, is like, can we see a picture of Manami so that we like have proof that it's her? And she sent one. She's like. Yeah, it was cool. It was cute. It was like a little selfie of like a music legend, and it was like it's like really bizarre, but that's what it was.
Wow. That's so cool.
Yeah, she's really shy apparently, so I was glad that she was able to, you know, we were able to get hyped up with her.
It's
awesome. Yeah, definitely. We chose the right the songs that she wrote are really great. I mean, we chose, I think, well, the two bosses that she did, but it's a secret.
I just think it's, I don't know, I hear stories like that, and I just think it's so cool, because, like, you know, there, so many people, like, say negative stuff about the way the game industry is today, but stuff like that didn't really happen, like, you know, back in the old days. I don't know, it's just awesome that a team of six people can come together and say, hey, we want to make this game that we love, and, like, it, you know, be able to be successful, and then stuff like that can happen as well. That's just so awesome to me.
Yeah, I totally agree. It's we're in a very, I don't know, transitive state of the industry where the power of who can make games is completely shifted away from big companies. You know, it's sort of like the music industry and the record label collapsing. It's like the idea of having to rely on anyone to make a game is gone, and you can just make it. And if it's good enough, or if people like it enough, you know, if it resonates with people, it'll get out there. And that's really been a huge boon for us.
That's so cool. That's just really, this is really cool. I can just imagine, like, just how exciting that would have been for you guys, considering, I mean, it sounds like you grew up, you know, playing these games like we did that she worked on, and you get to work with one of your idols. I don't know. That's really cool.
Yeah, and it's great. I mean, as a result, you know, at PAX Prime, Sean was able to meet. And Sean and Aaron were actually there with Jake. I think that's where you saw him. And they met, you know, Inafune.
Yeah.
We shook hands with him, took pictures and stuff. And
My friend went to the signing they had. I should have gone with him just to, like, shake his hand, but I was like, I don't really have anything for him to sign. But I was at his panel, and that was just really, really cool.
Didn't have anything for him to sign. I would have had him sign in my boobs like yesterday. Anyway. All right. Well, Addison, do you have any other questions from your list or anything?
Well, I mean, I know it probably seems like a really kind of no-brains question, but maybe you can share just exactly what was going on with you emotionally whenever the Kickstarter just started blowing up. Like, did you guys expect to, I'm sure you probably expected to at least get funded, but like, did you ever expect it to get as big as it did?
No way. It was certainly exciting. When we, put up our, so like, okay, so we put it up, and then we weren't really active on it. Like, we didn't have a lot of updates every day because we were getting ready for PAX, and we were getting that demo ready. And so, that was just a few days earlier. So once we finished with PAX, we came back, and, you know, I think by then the game was just about funded or at, you know, $50,000, and we were, like, really excited about that. And so we started doing updates every day, and that was fun, and we got a lot of responses to that. And once we saw the numbers go past, you know, we were funded, and that was exciting. And so we started doing our stretch goals. And our initial stretch goals up to 200K was to have the four-player Boston mode, and that was, like, that was something that we thought was cool, would be cool, but there's no way that it could happen, kind of thing, you know what I mean? And so when we hit it a week before,
really high.
Yeah, exactly. We set it to 200K. And so when we hit it a week before the game was going to be done, or the Kickstarter was going to be done, we were like really excited and then shocked. And then when we hit the next one, you know, when we set it to 300,000, it was crazy. It was like this weird exponential excitement level that just kind of exploded in our faces, and it was just hard. It was hard not to just, like, get really super enthusiastically just hyped about it. I mean, we were also sleep deprived because, like, doing a Kickstarter, not many people know this, but doing a Kickstarter is, like, an all-day thing. Nobody, all five people are constantly working on it. Everybody is either doing emails or responses or, you know, fielding questions, and it's, like, it's an everybody thing, you know? And so we're all, like, really tired, and part of the confusion was just, like, the hysteria brought on by 3 o'clock in the morning or 3 a.m. you know, sessions. But the last week was really great, and then the final day when it went up like $50,000. It was, I don't know, like, it's really hard to describe the level of just, like, thankfulness that we've had with the generosity of our backers, and I can't believe that we've gotten that far, and then it's propelled us this long, and it's been quite a crazy journey.
Well, it's cool too, because it seems like a lot of these Kickstarters that really blow up, it seems like they usually have to delay, you know, a lot because they have, you know, because their vision for the game grows from the new funding. But it seems like you guys have been pretty on track, which is cool to see.
Well, I mean, $75,000 sounds like a lot of money, but when you're doing it full time for five people, you break down the budget, and that doesn't work out to a lot of money. So we want to make sure that we could do it timely, and so we set it to September. But, you know, at PAX, or even before PAX, we realized that we were going to go past that. And so even on the demo for the original PAX demo, we said winter of that year. And so we were hoping for winter. It delayed a little bit. We went into late winter, and that became end of quarter one. And then quarter one kind of we just decided, made the decision to delay it for a little bit to get the last little bits squared away. So it seems like a lot of delays, but in our mind, the game was never going to come out until it was done.
Yeah.
And that's the most important part, right?
Yeah.
It's weird because the idea of a release date makes a lot of sense for a consumer and for a publisher and for just the industry as a whole, outside of the developer. The developer is like, they just want to make the game, and they want to make it good and make the experience great. And so, especially as our first game, we had to make sure that it wasn't going to be, a 6 out of 10. Estimations go. So
I think it was it Miyamoto that said something along the lines of, like, no one's going to remember how many times a game got delayed, only if it was good or not.
Yeah, I mean, I would believe that. That's definitely true, and that's the maxim that we've been working with. People will remember that Duke Nukem Forever took forever to come out, but mostly people just remember
that game. that was also kind of a weird fluke thing. That doesn't happen with a lot of games. Yeah, people remember that game was in development hell for 12 years and was also terrible.
Yeah, but if it had been, like, in development hell for 12 years and then was awesome, that would have been way different.
Yeah.
People would have remembered, like, oh, yeah, that was a great game, and I'm glad it came out. Too bad it took so long, but I'm glad it came out.
Like The Last Guardian when that finally comes out.
I know it's kind of a common, I don't know if complaint's the right word, but common issue with a lot of Kickstarters that when things get kind of delayed, a lot of the backers don't see it the same way, and they get really annoyed, and they think that they've been, like, robbed and cheated because they feel like that they have paid for something when really what they did is, you know, help fund it, and, you know, you're expected to wait. So have the majority of your backers been pretty patient and kind, or, like, have you guys been getting death threat emails?
I've yet to read a death threat, or even one that's exceedingly, that's more than just frustrated. We've been really fortunate to have a really great group of backers that are super in love with Shovel Knight and are willing to wait for it. You know, even when we announced our delay, we called it a delay extravaganza, sort of jokingly, but also because it was something that we wanted to do for the betterment of the game, and people resonated that and they understood it and they wanted it to happen. So, yeah, it's been very positive overall. And, especially with the game about to come out, you know, it's coming out in I guess 3 days. Jeez. like people are just very positive right now. Yeah, you know, when a Kickstarter is funded, people are paying money. You know, even though it is more of a pledge, it's like a pledge drive. Is I guess the closest analogy to an already established, you know, method. Even though it is sort of a pledge drive, they are losing money to do it. So I understand the frustration. I would be frustrated too, and I have been frustrated when a Kickstarter that I backed didn't work out. But you know, at the same time, it's actually what's more important to us is that we follow through on the commitments that we make. And so yeah, it's been really sad when we've had to delay it, just because I feel like we're kind of going back on our word. But at the same time, I feel like what decisions that we make are those that are best for both the fans that are backing it and just that the game itself is as good as it can possibly be.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's always kind of somewhat just a little understandable, but also kind of a little silly when people get super upset about games being delayed. Because, I mean, I don't know about our listeners, but I know that both me and Jordan, especially me, have an insane backlog. So, I mean, I have no shortage of things for waiting. It's not like I'm, like, starving for a game.
Yeah, totally. When we, I mean, since our release date, our initial March release date, until now, there's been, like, Dark Souls 2 has come out, so Titanfall, so has, like, I don't know, there's a count. Mario Kart 8, like,
oh my God,
very good games, you know?
Yeah.
So, there's been just a lot of...
Yeah, games that you can just keep going back to. I also really liked that analogy of Kickstarter being, like, a pledge drive. It's like, a lot more exciting, more hip pledge drive with a lot less Lawrence Welk. It's like... Those PBS pledge drives, always like playing the same Lawrence Welk show that everyone has somehow seen.
That's why it's, I mean, the terminology is pledges and reward tiers. So it's not, you know, it's not, people say a lot that it's not investing, and that's true. It's also not pre-ordering. And I'm not trying to say that people need to just give up their money and forget about it, but you got to understand the context of what's going on. You're developing. You're giving money to somebody who's promising the development of a project.
Yeah. It's like a trust kind of thing. Like you're giving them money and trusting. You just have to trust that they're going to, you know, put out what they say they're going to.
Yeah, it's a big trust exercise, that's for sure. And for the most part, I really hope that we haven't let anyone down too much. But I'm sure there's someone that's been upset enough by the delays to ask for a refund, but that's okay.
No, well, they'll get over it.
Hope so.
Yeah. I mean, like, that's ridiculous. I mean, asking for a refund of, like, I don't know. Surely they probably wasn't, like, a mind-melting amount of money. Like,
oh, my $10! I had to wait 3 months to play this awesome game.
Well, yeah. I mean, to be respectful, it is their $10, but...
I've backed some Kickstarters that I've been upset.
Yeah.
You know, I've got one right now that I'm kind of upset with, but I'm not, you know, I'm not going to freak out about
it. I was really thankful.
There was...
Sorry, go ahead.
No, I didn't have anything to do with what we were talking about.
The thing I was going to say was also completely non-secure.
There's a game that I actually backed that just came out, like, I think, like, last week. And the guy who was working on it was so bad with updates, I had just written it off as like, oh, I guess this is never coming out. I guess just, I got scammed or whatever. Yeah. And then the game just appeared like last week, and I supported it like 2 years ago.
Oh, wow. But, what game was that?
That's a good surprise. Called Crystal Catacombs. It's like, it's this kind of pixel art, like, I'll say like roguelike, like procedurally generated Metroidvania.
Oh my god, like, so many buzzwords.
Yeah. It's like, and that's how I can explain it though. You like start up in this randomly generated side-scrolling world where you can wall jump and you attack stuff and numbers pop off of them and monsters. And I don't know, it's really fun.
That's cool. So,
yeah.
Well, glad it worked out.
Yeah.
All right. You want to move to listener questions?
Let's do it. Oh, I had one more question before we go to listener questions.
Yeah, shoot.
Are there any, like, so are there any features that are exclusive to the different platforms that it's coming out on? Because I'm trying to decide what I'm going to buy it on.
Yeah, we've been asked that question a lot lately. So the PC version is a Steam, you know, it's the same as the Steam version, I guess. It has the least amount of exclusive features, you know, it has the achievement. The Steam version has trading cards, if that's your thing.
Selling them is my thing.
The Steam community. Yeah. but the Wii U has Miiverse stuff. The Miiverse stuff is like you, I guess this is another, you know, analog of Dark Souls, but basically in a room you enter in, you'll find a little message from another player, and it's room specific. So like when you go into the room with the, you know, the mole minion, you can say like, there's a big guy here, or like, careful, he's going to shoot fireballs, or just wait or whatever. And so like those messages will appear, on the Miiverse as you're playing the game. And, you can set your avatar to be one of the pixel characters, and you can be, and you know, it's all like in the Shovel Knight style as much as we can make it. And, yeah, so that's cool. There's a Miiverse integration for the Wii U. It also has off TV play,
yes.
So you can play on the gamepad. Which is really important for people that don't have a good TV.
Or a wife.
If your TV is super laggy, the gamepad is lagless, so that's awesome. I've heard horror stories. I think that one of the guys that works here, D'Angelo, his family had a TV that had like 1.5 seconds of lag. And
oh
it's just
gosh.
Like, no way. That's not acceptable.
So
they from now on, they have a Wii U. They play on the pad exclusively. They just turn their TV up. So anyway, we have
I
that.
I would hook it up to a tube TV.
On the 3DS,
like a tube TV.
There's Street Pass.
I said I said I would go buy a tube TV at Goodwill and like throw that TV in the trash.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Any day. actually, there are a few, if you can find them, they're hard to find, but there's a widescreen Sony TV that's a CRT that's
yeah,
like really nice.
Yeah.
I really want one of those.
Yeah, I need one of those too for my game room for all my old systems.
My dad.
Get some S.
We had
in there.
One of those in like the early 2000s. But I used to play like my retro consoles on it in like, you know, S video or whatever, and it was the best thing ever. And then it broke. So anyway.
No, that's the worst.
Yeah.
So yeah, get one of those if you don't have a Wii U, or if you have a Wii U, you can use the Wii Pad. There's also on the 3DS we have Street Pass. So like we have this like special mode where we tried to show it off at the Treehouse Live event recently, but there was just way too much interference with everybody having a 3DS. like we practiced and it took like 30 seconds for it to happen, and it was working in practice, but once it was live, and once there's like 1,000 people there, and everybody has 3DSs that all conflicting with each other's Street Pass stuff, it kind of got messed up. But if you saw that, you saw the initial part of it where you record yourself swinging around and jumping and trying to get the 5 gems that are on the screen. It's sort of like if you can imagine the Super Mario Brothers, not Super Mario Brothers 1, but like the Mario Brothers competitive game that weird
the arcade one, like the one that
yeah
is really similar to Whoa Dave.
Very similar to Whoa Dave. So it's like that, but like you can't see the other player, and so you're just jumping around and trying to get all the gems before they do. And then what happens is we take your recording and the person that you Street Pass, and we play their recording on top of yours but mirrored. And so the first person to make contact wins, hit the other guy. or if nobody makes contact, the person with the most gems at the end of it wins. And it's like a 5-second battle. It's like really fast. And you have three of these. And so it's like this really, really quick, input recording that gets played on top of each other. And it becomes this weird, like, you know, my strategy at the beginning is to throw out a bunch of coins and then jump because people usually throw out a fireball. And so it's like, you're like having mind games with just like a countless amount of impossible, invisible opponents. And it's actually a lot of fun. But that's on the 3DS.
I was just going to ask if there was, like, a reward in those Street Pass battles.
The reward in game is very minor. You get some money. But the most of it is that we wanted to make a game that was rewarding in and of itself, that was like a game. Mm-hmm. You know, a lot of Street Pass is just like, it's a token that unlocks a thing. It's a, you know, puzzle piece, or it's another guy that helps you, or it's a, I think that like the, one of the better ones is like the Fire Emblem where you fight a guy, but it's still sort of like by proxy. And so we wanted to make sure it was like you're fighting each other, and it's random and silly and crazy, but, we wanted to make sure it was more than just a token exchange.
Does it keep track of your stats as well? Like how many you've won?
Yeah. There's a guy. So it's like it's a Street Pass arena. So there's a little lobby area. I guess you can call it that. But there's a few guys in there, and one of them tells you the stats of how well you did, your favorite weapon is, and all that. So, yeah, that one's pretty good.
Yeah, that sounds really cool.
I gotta ask. Are there?
Oh yeah, that's the other thing. Stereo Optic 3D. So, the 3D looks really nice. It was really sad because at PAX East, when we were showing it off, you know, we would turn the 3D on and people would need to turn it off. And, you know, there's some people just can't handle 3D. But those of you that can, definitely turn it on. It's really great. I love it.
More or less extreme, but yeah. It definitely helps.
For sure.
So I like playing games that do it all the 3D as well.
Yeah. So, maybe that. The Miiverse, like, I don't know if you've seen them going around on like the bad Miiverse posts. Just made me think, like, hey, watch out. There's a bad guy in here. I really miss my brother.
those have been really good ever since Why Can't Metroid Duck has been my favorite.
Why Can't Metroid Crawl, indeed.
Those are so good. Alright, so, listener questions?
Yeah, let's hit up those listener questions.
Okay.
I've got them pulled up. Do you have any pulled up?
I've got the show post ones on Destructoid and the Twitter ones. Were there any others?
You go ahead and do the Destructoid ones. I've got the Twitter ones. How about that?
Okay.
All right, you go. I'm sure we have less Detoid ones.
Yeah, there is an entire two. I don't know. I thought I posted it, you know, as soon as I got up, but I don't know. I thought more people would ask, but whatever. At least we got some. That's all that really matters. So Peter Lenz on Detoid, he asks if there's any chance that the Digger's Diary will get patched into the 3DS version of the game.
The Digger's Diary, in case you don't know, the Digger's Diary is a name of the Miiverse stuff. So when you're recording messages and sending them to other players, you're messing with a Digger's Diary.
Yeah, because I guess the 3DS has Miiverse now. I forgot about that.
Yeah, the Miiverse kind of came late in the game, though. We had already developed the actual systems for it by the time they even announced that it was happening. We don't have any plans right now, but that's definitely something that we would consider. You know, we're going to be adding these content patches for the next year or so. And so I'm sure that as we're doing that, something will come up where we want to, besides just adding new content, we'll want to make the original content better. And that might come in the form of bug fixes if we find any of those, or it might come in the form of, like some minor content adjustments. Miiverse might be big, but we'll definitely look into it.
Yeah, that'd be really cool. I haven't really even done hardly any Miiverse stuff on my 3DS. It's a little more not as intuitive as it is on the Wii U, but...
Oh, really? Yeah, I haven't actually tried it. I don't have a Wii U. I have a 3DS, but I haven't tried the Miiverse stuff on the 3DS.
It works okay. It's just kind of slow.
Yeah. That's, I mean, based on my experience with the internet browser or Netflix or, you know, any of the other, like, third-party... you know, internet browsing stuff on the 3DS, I would bet that it would be a little bit slower.
Yeah. Also, Retro Faction on Destructoid, he was wanting to know what the idea, he says, what was the idea for Yacht Club Games' name? He wants to know where it came from. He pondered that maybe I've been planning on buying a yacht and doing all the development on a yacht.
that would be really fun.
I like to say we're all in the same boat.
So Yacht Club Games, I guess the name came about, a yacht is sort of something that's a symbol of, you know, great, exuberant, overabundant wealth. It's very snooty. We actually have like a, if you look at the logo, you see a little face and he's like, you know, snubbing his nose at you and looking down on the commoners. And it's like this very snobby, you know, only in it for the money kind of, and it's everything that we're not. it's sort of a farcical look on ourselves as a company, like putting that out there. I guess it's also just like a fun little character. We originally had like the ideas of like him like sitting on a sea of money. That's kind of really emphasize it. Yacht Club Games sort of came about in the same way that we approach our game making. It started as a joke and then became like too real. We're not actually just in it for the money, but we it's fun to poke fun at ourselves, I guess.
Yeah.
We made the yacht a character.
Yeah.
So we love the yacht, and we speak through the yacht when we talk to our fans. So
I never even noticed the face until you said something just now. Actually,
yep.
Pretty simple.
Yeah, we call him Snooty Boat.
The SS Snooty Boat.
That's the best.
Maybe if Shovel Knight does well enough, you guys can all get your own yachts.
That would be like super impossible.
Well, yeah, maybe with that attitude.
Sorry, yeah, I guess that's true. I guess it depends on how you qualify a yacht.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I didn't say like a full size real yacht. Maybe like a Hot Wheels yacht. I don't know if Mattel makes a Hot Wheels yacht, but they should.
I'll look into it.
All right, let's hit up some Twitter questions. Portable Power, they are another handheld gaming podcast that we love. I love this question. If you make enough from the sales of Shovel Knight, would you please consider purchasing Capcom and restoring Mega Man's glory?
Yes. That's up there with buying your own yachts.
Yeah. Forget the yacht, yeah. We have Mega Man to save.
Yeah.
I guess it would be cool to, this is like a ridiculous, you know, thought experiment, but it would be cool to be in charge of like some of those IPs. It'd be fun to do like I love fighting games, and so I'm not very good at them, but I always I like playing them a lot, so it'd be fun to like work on one or somehow working on like a Street Fighter game or something. But yeah, that's crazy.
I mean, who knows, maybe you guys will end up working on like whatever the sequel to Mighty Number 9 is.
Yeah, maybe we're working with those guys. Those guys are pretty cool. We actually are using the 8-4 is the guys that ran our Kickstarter, and they're like their eyes in the West. And we worked with them we helped Mighty Number 9 at the beginning to kind of like give them some ideas for their Kickstarter, and we also are working with 8-4 to get Shovel Knight out in Japan, I think. Or we're looking into that at least.
That's pretty cool. Man, it was just so crazy to be sitting in that room when they announced Mighty No. 9 and they had the Kickstarter up on the screen, and it was like, I don't remember, but I can't remember exactly what the amount was by the time I had left the room, but
oh, yeah.
It was like already like, I think nearing in like $5,000 or something. Like it was so crazy. It'd been up for like 5 minutes.
Yep. Yeah, man, that's what happens when, Keiji Inafune decides to do a Kickstarter.
Yeah.
Mostly based on like, his name alone.
Yeah.
I mean, he had some concept art in there, and it was pretty cool, but...
I mean, it helped that it was, like...
Tax Prime for item number 9.
Oh, yeah, Aaron and Sean were there. They got t-shirts and everything.
Yeah, I've got... I have...
847.
I need to... I'm tempted to get up and go get my shirt out of my closet, and I can't remember what my mighty number was, but it was, yeah, I thought it was kind of high because they said like everyone would have the lowest ones. And then I started looking at the message boards and was like, oh man, mine is really low.
Yeah, I have like number 64,000 or something because I donated like over the last couple of days.
Yeah. Man, that was a really exciting moment. I was there with friends of the show, Dan Brown, and we were so excited. Sorry, you're doing these. I forgot.
More Twitter questions. Tyler Olu, faithful question asker, who finally changed his avatar. Anyway, he asks, there's been some negativity surrounding new games that pull at our old hearts and decidedly retro trappings. So what elevates Shovel Knight beyond just being a game that appeals to our nostalgia?
So, yeah, that's definitely a good question. I feel like I recognize Tyler's name. I don't know what that is, but anyway.
I was just going to say, he says also, he had a second question, and he said that he wrote a feature, and I guess maybe he had talked to someone, Sean Velasco. He said
that's right.
Something.
Okay. So. Yeah, okay. So he's probably been in my emails somewhere. What makes Shovel Knight different than just a nostalgia grab? I think the difference that we've tried to pursue is to make sure that Shovel Knight is not referencing directly those games from that era, but more like it fits in that era, like it has its own nostalgia. Like it's a game that you could have picked up next to Castlevania, or that you could have picked up instead of playing, Mario 3. The idea there being that we're not just relying on pulling at your heartstrings to play the game, but that the game is good, the game feels good, and has simple core mechanics without ever saying, it's dangerous to go alone, take this. Like, we don't ever rely on it. And that was, like, very intentional and very purposeful from the start. You know, it's not a game born of memes. It's a game born out of the true design of the games at that time. And so it was, yeah, it's a struggle to balance that because, not the memes part. It's pretty easy to avoid those. But it's a hard to balance the perception of what an 8-bit game or like what a pixel game is. But what we like to do is to make sure that the game played fun first and that worked well, and then just kind of like implement it with pixel art. You could say that, you can look at this game and figure out if it's fun without the pixel graphics. Like, could that happen? And that's a question that I try to look at the lens of when looking at other retro games, is to make sure that I'm not just enamored by pixel graphics, that the actual gameplay is exciting and it comes back because I'm coming back to it because I want to have that experience, not just because the pixel art's fun. That's what we mean when we're talking about the Nintendo at heart. You know, it's something that is a true experience at its core, not just a cash grab. So, it's something that we intended. If it feels that way, that means that we failed in its presentation, but hopefully it doesn't feel that way. And it feels like you can, enjoy the game for what it is, not for what it's trying to reference.
Sweet. Yeah, and like we were talking about earlier, I think it's also, plain to see, just looking at the game, that it's not just a nostalgia grab, because you can see that you've gone above and beyond to make it as authentic as you possibly can while still making it, a enjoyable game.
Yeah, I mean,
there's a thing to be said because, like, There are games out there that I played this game, Grincia, this RPG that's supposed to emulate 16-bit RPGs, and it's terrible. It's for the 3DS and for the iPhone. And, it's obviously when you play it that it's just a cash grab trying to cash in on your nostalgia. But then there's games that it's like there's something about those games that obviously we're missing or we'd like to bring back into, I don't know. There's something about those games we'd like to get back, and so I don't think there's anything necessarily wrong with that. If your artistic vision is, I want to make a game that feels like, those games that I used to play as a kid, then I don't know what's wrong with that.
Yeah.
I think what's wrong is...
A lot of what happens, too, is just your feasibility of creating a game. We are not a huge studio. I did all the pixel art of the game, except for, there's very few instances where Sean or Aaron or we had an intern come in and do some pixel art, but for the most part, it's a one person focused effort. And so I can't do, you know, even 16-bit graphics. I can't do that many in the short amount of time. And so, yeah, it's a feasibility thing.
This was a very custom project for the team.
Yeah,
the
for
size,
sure.
So,
yeah, yeah, the needs of the team, you know, kind of dictated a lot of where that went. I mean, it's hard to, it's hard to say that it's not only a cash grab, it's not a cash grab at all, because it's like, I mean, we are using pixel graphics and we're using the NES, and we're not trying to be as authentic to the NES as possible either. Like, yeah, we are using the authentic NES palette, but we're breaking stuff. Like, you know, we have sprites on the screen that are too big, or we're not, limiting ourselves to, like, we don't have any sprite flickering at all, because that just looks bad. So.
Yeah, we tried to put some style into this to make it our as customizable to an NES sprite-looking game as possible. I think we did sort of all right.
Sort of all right. That's, like, probably a huge understatement.
Okay, Tyler also asked, he's asking, essentially, does Shovel Knight make use of autosaves or quick saves on the 3DS to make it more playable on a portable, he's asking.
Oh, yeah, you won't have to go to a save point or anything. It saves anytime that you go to the map, actually. So it's not going to save mid-level, but it will save once you finish a level or once you exit a level. So yeah, it's very, like, completable friendly.
Sweet.
Or mobile friendly, I guess.
All about that. RoboDuke.
Yeah, me too.
RoboDuke, aka Keith, asks, are there multiple endings in Shovel Knight? That's kind of a spoiler, though, so I don't know if you want to...
Well, there's not now. But I think that when we do our playable boss nights and stuff, and possibly when we do gender swap mode, that we're going to have unique story points for the characters involved. So when you play as King Knight, it's probably going to be a very different ending than with Shovel Knight.
Pseudo Legend asks, if I beat the game, do I get to play the game again without the helmet? Which I'm going to morph into, do we ever get to see Shovel Knight without his helmet? Is it just helmet underneath Shovel Knight's helmet?
Like that gif of the guy knocking the bucket off the guy's head.
There's not, like, different outfits for Shovel Knight at this point, but that's definitely something that could come up later. Like, that's a pretty simple, just, you know, character art replacement, and that could take not too long to do. As far as what's underneath Shovel Knight's helmet, there is a little bit of a Easter egg in the game, and that sort of alludes to it, but doesn't explicitly say. And I'm not gonna say more than that.
It's a dinosaur. You heard it here
too much already. So you'll have to play the game and find out.
Well, I'm gonna definitely be keeping an eye out for that then.
I'm looking at these 3DS screenshots on my 3DS right now, and now I really can't decide which one I want to buy. This is terrible. Oh,
I can't hear you at all. What did you say?
Oh, I'm sorry. I said I was looking. I'm looking at the screenshots of the game on my 3DS in the eShop, and now I really can't decide which version I'm going to pick up.
No, I did those a couple weeks ago, and it was really hard. I really want to make those 3D, but I didn't have the time.
Yeah, I've heard that's annoying because I heard someone else did that.
Yeah, you gotta. It's a very complicated process. Well, it's not complicated. It's just very, I guess, elaborate. Like, you gotta do a lot of small things to make it work. But the results are great. I did when WayForward was putting out, my Switch Force, I did the 2D, like, you know, images in the store there, or the 3D images there. And that was fun. But, maybe I'll update those actually today. That'd be cool.
All okay. Right. Well, that's all the questions we've got. Addison, anything else you want to add?
Not really. I'm just really, really excited to play this.
Yeah. I mean, it comes out, man, just like, oh, that's Thursday, right? 26th? Yeah.
Yeah.
It's Thursday.
Man, you guys must be so excited too, just to kind of get it in people's hands as well.
Oh yeah. I'm very, very excited and also very, very nervous. I'm just waiting for somebody, because, I mean, there's only been a few of us that have been able to play it and test it and stuff. I'm just waiting for somebody to find some crazy bugs. But hopefully that won't happen. I mean, it's been pretty solid so far. There's been some, like, once we sent it out to the press a couple days ago, we've had some people say there's a bug that we fixed really quickly. We made a patch. But hopefully there's nothing too big, and hopefully people like it.
I mean, if you guys wanted to be super authentic, you could just be like, oh, sorry, not patching it.
it's like we're trying to be authentic. Yeah.
You gotta deal with it. Man, how weird is that gonna be the first time, like, you're out and about and you street pass someone you don't know and they've been playing, it shows like that their recent game is Shovel Knight.
I'm really looking forward to that. I'm like battling somebody that I've never met before.
Yeah.
With Street Pass, that would be super cool.
I mean, you know it's going to happen. It's just a matter of time now. Like, it could happen as early as Thursday. Who knows? Man. All right. Well, as you can tell, just everyone here is so excited. I know...
Like, all two of us.
All two of us. Well, I was going to say, I know that all of our listeners are really excited. This is, you know, exactly the kind of game that's up their alley. But I just really want to take a moment to thank you for coming on. I know that you guys are probably getting hit up a lot right now with the game coming out, and I'm sure it's tiring to talk about over and over and over again. I just want to thank you guys for coming on and spending some time with us and talking about the game.
Yeah, absolutely. It's a lot of fun to hang out with you guys.
Did you want to say anything, Jordan?
No, just thanks for coming on, man. I think you're our favorite interview so far. It was awesome.
For sure. You guys are so nice. I don't remember if I very, very briefly met some people from the team last year at PAX Prime. I really just don't remember who I met. It was at it was the night before the first day of PAX. I think it was like GameWorks. Is that the name of the place? It was Is that what it was? GameWorks?
Yeah, arcade.
Yeah, so I was with some Destructoid people and like briefly met some of you guys, and then obviously, you know, I hung out with you guys for a bit that Saturday night, I think it was, at PAX East this year, and you guys are just easily some of the nicest people in the industry that I've met. Wow. And so, you guys are great.
Oh, great, yeah. I'm glad we could be nice, I guess.
Well, I mean, like, I haven't really met too many people in the industry that were just like straight up dicks or anything, but
well, I mean, Inafune did refuse to sign your boob, so that was
I didn't even go to the signing.
I think that I would have refused to sign your boob. Oh. Aaron might have done it.
I'm surprised. Yeah. I didn't ask anyone to. I was not the most sober that night.
That's okay. I had a run in with somebody at the most recent at E3. I was at a party and I ran into somebody who was very drunk and very touchy. that got awkward really fast, so I'm sure it wasn't that bad.
It was Reggie, wasn't it?
I don't remember being at E3.
It was fun.
I'm hoping you're not telling us who it was, because it's like someone that we would know and you can't say.
Well, I know the company that they were from, that's for sure.
Oh, yeah. So it was Reggie.
I'm just going to just assume it was Jeff Keighley. I have no reason to think it was him, but it just makes me happy to think that it was him. So that's what I'm going with.
All right, guys. Well, thank you for being on. I think we're going to go ahead and close out. So,
yeah, thank you so much. Yeah. I don't know if you guys want to like pimp any online stuff real quick.
Oh, yeah. You can follow us at Yacht Club Games on Twitter, YachtClubGames. And you can also follow me. I'm at Norkwoz, Norkwoz. And you can follow, I guess, Aaron. Do you have a Twitter?
Not so much, but you can listen to me someday. You can go to yachtclubgames.com and you can see all sorts of cool stuff on the website.
Oh, yeah, we've been updating the website lately a bunch. You can see all kinds of stuff. Like, we did a recent post about the design concepts behind the checkpoint and behind a bunch of stuff, and we're going to be adding a lot to that. So
there's an awesome press kit, so you can go grab some art and make some stuff.
Oh, yeah, the press kit. Anyway, so yeah, yachtclubgames.com.
Cool. All right. Well, again, thank you so much. And thank you guys for listening. As you hear at the end of every episode, I've been Addison. You can follow me on Twitter at Addison_L. And
I'm Jordan. You can follow me on Twitter at Jackal27. And you can also follow the show at Pocketoid, or, you know, go to our... You guys know the drill.
Yeah, do an internet.
All right. We'll see you guys later.
Okay, love you. Bye.
Bye.
Yep, thank you.